You are listening to the Tricorder Transmissions, episode 120. And now, here are Jeff and Ian.
Hi, everybody. Before we start the show, I just wanted to remind you all out there that our iTunes review contest is still running. If you go over to iTunes and leave us a written review, including your name and some way to contact you, your name will be entered into a contest to win a $20 Shop LLAP gift card. And we will be drawing the winner and announcing it on April 30th on our show and on Facebook and Twitter on our own website as well. So run on over, you have a little bit of time left to go, and leave us an iTunes review, and you could be a winner. And with that familiar music, you know that you are once again listening to the Tricorder Transmissions. Today we're going to be covering Gold Key Comics, issue number 30, Death of a Star. I'm your host, Jeff Hewlett, and with me is my Gold Key Comics co-chair, Mr. Ian Adams.
Hello.
Hello again, sir. How are you?
Ah, I'm doing well. Almost home.
Almost home, yes. You'll be going back to your home in the upper Pacific Northwest very, very shortly.
Yeah, can't wait.
You sound excited.
It's been way too long.
Actually, by the time this episode airs, you'll have been home
for
quite a while and possibly redeployed.
Right. Might even be out in the middle of the Pacific by then.
So everybody who's listening to this, don't think you're actually following along with Ian Adams' life in real time.
Yeah. Go to Twitter for that.
Yeah, that's the place to find it, Ian128K on Twitter. So you'll notice, our more astute listeners may notice that we said this is issue number 30.
Yeah.
And you may wonder, what happened to issue 29? Well, bad news for you. The Gold Key folks, in their infinite wisdom back in the day, decided to make issue 29 a reprint of issue number 1, The Planet of No Return. And that issue featured the only appearance of Janice Rand in the Gold Key Comics series. So definitely worth looking that one up if you haven't read that one already, if you're jumping into our coverage here later on and didn't read the first issue. It's an interesting issue. It comes, it starts off kind of with a bang, with a planet of plants. The early vegetable men,
yes,
who take Janice Rand captive and torment some of the Enterprise landing party. So fun to read. And so we have our coverage of that up. Of course, you can go back and listen to it anytime you like. It's in our catalog. And sooner or later here, we're going to be going back in time with Ian and having some discussions about the older issues that he did not get a chance to weigh in on because he came in a little later in the game as far as co-hosting. So, Ian, I'm sure you're going to be up for that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but longtime listeners, of course, will know what my opinion of issue 1 was.
And, well, we're still going to go back and revisit it anyway. So we have
absolutely.
The first 20 issues to cover with Ian. So we're going to figure out how we're going to do that. We're not sure yet how we're going to actually execute that, but we're going to make it happen. So stay tuned. Stay tuned. But for now, we are going to be talking about issue number 30, Death of a Star. And again, we have another new writer to Gold Key. And I hope I'm pronouncing his name properly. Mr. Alan Moniz. Moniz? How would you pronounce that, Ian? I think it's...
Moniz, I guess.
M-O-N-I-Z. So let's see. Alberto Giolitti, again, is our artist here for the inside of the book. And this was published in May of 1975, 25 pages. We're still in the shorter format. And we have a really weird star date for this one. I think someone just hit
a key
a bunch of times in a row. It's 33.3. So I think someone just kind of threw in the towel and said, I'm not going to bother making up an interesting date. I'm just going to hit the 3 key a bunch of times in a row and be done with it. But the thing, I didn't find any information on who did the cover for this issue, and it is not. I don't think it's a George Wilson cover. It certainly doesn't look like one.
No, it's definitely not a George Wilson cover. And if you look really carefully and compare it to several pages, like the top left image there is Spock and whoever the new character is in the foreground.
Yep.
Or in the background. I mean, it is the, like, compare the lines, right? It is the same art. And all of those little art pieces, except for the eye in the middle, are art pieces from the issue itself. So it's kind of a almost like a Warhol-esque re-rendition of artwork from the issue itself.
Oh, very cool. Good eye on that one. I didn't pick up on that, but I actually, this cover, I think this is kind of a neat cover. I like the layout of this cover. It conveys a sense of mystery and danger, I think, with the different scenes, because it's cut up into three different sections. Well, technically four, if you count the middle triangle, it's just the eyeball shape.
Yeah.
And let's start in the upper left-hand corner in the first section is this new robed character. Not sure if that's a man or a woman at this point. We find out inside the book it is a woman, but I couldn't tell at first glance by looking at this. It looks like some sort of a priest or a monk or something.
You know who it reminded me of? And at first I thought maybe it might be like a Vulcan, because it looks like T'Lar from Star Trek III.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, it does kind of look like one of the Vulcans in a ceremonial garb.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she has her hand on Mr. Spock's forehead, and Spock looks potentially stunned or hypnotized, maybe, or in some sort of a shocked state.
Yeah.
Not sure exactly what's going on there, if we're getting a reverse mind meld or something.
Right, that was what it looked like to me, and so that combined with the sort of, the similarity to T'Lar, it got me thinking, oh, what's this? Are we going back to Vulcan, or what's going on?
That would have been interesting if we did. Spoiler alert, everybody. We don't go back to Vulcan in this one. And there's a kind of an orange and purple swirly background, so that's what made me go with the hypnosis route, because it looked to me like one of those kind of, hippie 60s psychedelic sort of swirly patterns in the background that kind of indicates that there's some sort of a kind of weird state of mind going on here.
It is interesting how each of those three images, there's the eye triangle thing that is in the center of them all, is in two of them, but not that one with the priestess.
It is not. I think we're getting into a little bit of an Illuminati type theory here going on. We need Tom Hanks to come in and take a look at this cover and see if he can crack the code.
Ah, she must be one of the gnomes of Zurich.
Oh, man. So the second section, which takes up the entire right side of the cover, it's got the pyramid eye that Ian mentioned. It's kind of up at the top, and it's emanating these like purple, kind of almost looks like paint, but it's kind of wavy line looking things. And we see some Enterprise crew members tumbling through space or falling in some way, shape, or form. So there's definitely something weird going on there. The eye is kind of gazing down at them menacingly.
And you can tell the yellow one is Kirk because of the rank stripes.
Yes. And we can assume that maybe that's Uhura there in the red.
Yep.
There's another female there who, nondescript, could be Nurse Chapel, maybe. Hard to tell. No hair color to give it away. And we don't know. The fourth one is another male, but he's facing the opposite direction. So it's very difficult to tell if that's Spock. Could be Spock. But we're not quite sure yet. But we'll find out.
We will.
Yeah, and let's see, there's a bit of text on this section that says the last gasp of a dying star. Doesn't give away too much.
No. And it's interesting because you don't get that from any of the imagery, really, save for maybe the last one.
Yeah, maybe the last one. But, you know, the thing about the last section of this that made me not think it was a dying star blowing up is because there's looks like chunks of rock coming out of it. And I don't think we'd see, unless there was a nearby planet that exploded because of the exploding of the star. But the pyramid eye thingy-mabob is kind of in the middle of this, like it's in the center point of the explosion, and everything else is emanating out from around it. So we get the poor Enterprise, the pink Enterprise, is kind of on an off angle here. This is not a normal...
Yeah, it looks really good.
Yeah, that's kind of neat. We don't really see... I wonder if everybody inside the ship is kind of falling down to the bottom of the
maybe,
saucer.
Maybe there. That's what the panel on the right is about.
Oh, good call. Good call. So yeah, the you're seeing the bottom... of the, so it's almost up, it's the Enterprise is kind of sitting completely on its side here, and we're not sure if it's avoiding some of these beams that are coming out of the eyeball pyramid thing. It's shooting these like looking laser looking things, but they're missing the Enterprise because then maybe an evasive maneuver, or is the Enterprise completely out of control? I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I don't know. This is just a really compelling cover, though.
It is. I like the fact that it makes you think there's a lot going on. It's definitely got some danger to it, especially the scenes with the crew falling and the ship being tossed around through space with this giant explosion and all the weird swirls in the background. So anything could happen in this issue.
I will say, though, that it's a really good cover. And of course, I mean, you know, I love Giolitti's art. But I have to wonder what it would look like if George Wilson had done something like this. You know, like keep the sort of three-panel motif just with his renderings of each of these scenes. I think that would have been really interesting.
I agree. Especially the bottom-most one with the ship.
Yeah.
You don't see him do the ship very often.
Right. Yeah, the closest we got was the shuttle.
Yeah.
In the last one, that shuttle, which was red.
Yeah, we don't see space scenes, really. Right. Not like that, anyway. Sometimes you see the people in spacesuits, but it's always, you know, with aliens or monsters, you know, chasing them down or capturing them or something of that nature. So
Wilson's good, though. I bet he could have done it.
Wilson's great. Well, and that makes me wonder. I wonder why he didn't do this cover.
Yeah, right? I don't know. Because he did the last one, I believe.
I don't know if he does the next one. I haven't looked ahead.
Yeah, he did the cover of the reprint of issue number one, issue 29.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I guess he was the only artist working that month, but not this one. Yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting to try to figure that out.
Well, we'll have to see if we can figure that out at some point. But are you ready to jump into the issue? We have anything else you want to
say? Oh, yeah, let's do it.
All right. So, everybody, we are about to start talking about the teaser page. So if you haven't read this and you don't want it spoiled for you, feel free to pause us now and look up this issue and then come back to us when you're finished. Otherwise, we are going to start our discussion of the teaser page in 3, 2, 1. So, familiar image here on the teaser page. It is essentially an expanded version of the upper left-hand first panel section on the cover, with Spock having we don't know exactly if it's his memory being sucked from his brain or something here. We don't know what's going on, but we've got this priest, and it's revealed here that this is a woman. She's got her hand on Spock's head. The swirls are happening in the background. This time they're yellow, orange, and red. And we've got two Enterprise crew members in the foreground, one of whom is Kirk. And the other one we're assuming is Nurse Chapel, because Kirk is saying, "I'm not sure, Nurse, but I think she's going to explode."
Which is never something that you want to hear anybody doing.
No, definitely not. So we've got a text box here, as we always do on the teaser page, that is going to give us a little bit of a insight into what we can expect here in this issue. And it reads, "Trapped on a veritable keg of cosmic dynamite, Captain Kirk and the Star Trek crew become an unwilling captive audience to the most shattering spectacle in all the galaxy. a star going nova. But the natural cataclysm takes on tragic overtones when a mysterious old woman's life is mystically linked to a strange cosmic force. Very ominous. So this woman, we don't know if she's a good guy, a bad guy. We have no idea what the villain is going to be in this comic. But interestingly enough, we've got another star going nova. Didn't we just have a star going nova?
We sure did.
Super space that propelled us back into the prime universe from the alternate dimension that they were in after going through a black hole. So a lot of novas happening.
Yeah, you know, it's a Nova Palooza.
Yeah, it's, I guess novas aren't as rare as we thought they were, at least in the area in which the Enterprise normally hangs out. Anyway, I'm sure there's novas going on everywhere, but all across the universe. But in the small area in which the Enterprise patrols, it's interesting to see how many stars go nova.
Yeah, apparently the average is 3.5 novae per year in the Milky Way galaxy. And that's a pretty big area for just 3.5, you know?
Yeah, so it's quite rare.
Yeah.
So I don't think this teaser gives us a heck of a lot to go on, which I guess is a good thing.
Yeah. Just like the cover, it's compelling. It makes you want to turn the page.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what's going on here. We're not sure if this is a noble gesture by this old lady or if she's attacking Spock. It looks like Kirk and Chapel seem either blinded or being pushed away by some sort of a force. We're not quite sure. They're in sort of defensive positions with their hands up.
Yeah.
Yeah, not the greatest likeness of Shatner here.
No. In fact, I would argue that the figures that Giolitti draws in most of the issue are all in really, really weird poses. Like, this is one of them. I mean, Kirk's in kind of an awkward, you know, like, who stands like that? And
yeah, it is a very awkward pose. Chapel's is a little more normal.
Right.
For a shocked pose.
But helped by the fact that she's, you know, like, half of her is off the panel.
Yeah, yeah, the way Kirk's legs are positioned, it kind of makes it look like he's falling backwards.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, maybe off balance a bit.
And I get that from a lot of the panel. I'll point out some of them as we go through them.
Speaking of going through panels, we're going to jump into the issue here, unless you have anything else you want to add about the teaser.
No, let's do it.
All right. So we've got a captain's log at the beginning here that I'll read through. Captain's log, stardate 33.3. Our mission is to study and record from a safe distance the final death throw of the star Isis. Yeah, interesting name in our times that we're reading.
Yeah.
According to our calculations, this gem of space has only 48 hours before it explodes, destroying everything for billions upon billions of cubic miles. Fortunately, its solar system is uninhabited. We'll get back to cubic miles in a minute. All right. So the Enterprise is on this mission to observe the death of the star Isis. Calculations indicate that it has only 48 hours. And the solar system, thankfully, is uninhabited according to the Federation's records. But, of course, Mr. Sulu picks up some humanoid life on a planet that's I think it's the third planet of this system. They call it Isis 3. So Spock estimates that the odds are 87.6631251 that the readings are a result of the system malfunction. But Kirk, of course, as Kirk does, says that even if it's one human life, he considers the odds even. So he orders the ship in for a closer look. Of course, Uhura reports that there's a massive life force on the planet below, suggesting a larger population than they initially thought. So oddly, however, the life is all emanating from one specific spot on the planet, as if the entire population were in one small little area. So Kirk and Spock and Uhura and Nurse Chapel beam down to the surface to investigate. So just before they leave, of course, Kirk orders Scotty to wait exactly 23 hours and 59 minutes for them to return and then take the ship out in warp as fast as they can as to get away from the potential nova that's going to happen. So on the planet, the landing party beams down and is guided by these flashes of light energy and wind up at a huge religious temple. So Nurse Chapel says that the life readings are going crazy and there must be an army inside this temple, as her tricorder is indicating an insane amount of life force. So Kirk orders them to set their phasers on stun. They approach the front door of the temple and the doors open all by themselves, and a voice from inside beckons them, "Welcome, beings of earth and water. Enter the temple of the sun god incarnate." So we're going to pull the truck over here and start talking a little bit about this. Nice screech noise there, Ian. And all right, so cubic miles, Ian, far as I know, that's a measurement of volume.
That is a measurement of volume. I mean, it kind of makes sense, right? Like,
sort of.
You know, there would be, you could measure its destruction in terms of volume.
True.
But it would make way more sense, I think, to say, you know, give like a diameter and just say everything within this diameter.
Yes. Yep. I agree. Well, maybe they were trying to represent three-dimensional space by saying cubic miles.
Yeah. But also, it should have been meters or kilometers or
true
something, because, you know, miles, come on, this is Star Trek.
Yeah. Spot quoting the odds. This seems very C-3PO to me. In Gold Key, he seems to be much more precise about his decimal, and have you noticed places.
That sort of thing has been really kind of creeping in lately. Like the last issue had him, I believe, quoting a probability like that. And then there was one other before that. I forget if it was the issue before the one even before, like two before that.
Hmm.
But I wonder if it's the sort of thing that, you know, the editors were like, hey, you know, I've been watching Star Trek and Spock seems to do this thing all the time. I applaud it because it is very Spock-like for him to do that.
But what does it say about the condition of the Enterprise if the odds of a malfunctioning sensor are 88-1 in favor of it being a malfunction? That really doesn't say much for Scotty's performance.
Yeah, well, it also doesn't say much for Spock's performance, as he's the one who's using them all the time and presumably also doing maintenance and that sort of thing on them.
Yeah, he needs to be doing a little more calibration work,
I think.
Yeah, that's a very high margin, I think, of malfunctioning sensors. And how can they possibly trust any of their readings with a ratio that high?
Yeah. Are you sure you're even near a star?
No, we're still in space dock, actually. We never actually left.
So one of the things that I really like about this page was that the art feels like Giolitti has finally just become comfortable with drawing Star Trek. Nobody's missing their Delta shields on their uniforms.
Yep.
The bridge looks right. The Enterprise looks right, except for if you notice, the impulse engines are just like a couple of tubes, which is a little weird.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, like, everything on it looks right.
Yep.
This is a guy who 30 issues in, or, you know, 29 if you want to skip the reprint, has really just figured it out, it seems, and it really shows in this issue.
He's kind of coming into his own. The only thing that I have a little bit of an issue with art wise on this page is the attitude pose that Spock has in the fourth panel down at the bottom.
Yeah,
he's like, mm-hmm. He's got his hands on his hips, he's got his head cocked to one side, and he's kind of admonishing Captain Kirk a little bit.
Yeah, it's another one of those just weird poses in this issue. You look also, it looks like his center of gravity is a little bit forward of him and he's going to fall backwards.
Mm, definitely. I do like, you know, Kirk sitting in the chair with his legs crossed, though, with that kind of contemplative pose. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and the Kirk in the last panel looks really good.
That's a very good likeness,
Yeah, as does the Sulu in panel 3.
Yeah, the dramatic lighting in panel 5 on Kirk's face is great.
Yeah, totally.
Very stern look on his face. But unfortunately, on the next page, Uhura's name is spelled wrong again.
Yeah.
It's still Uhuru. But does it come across to you like Spock is actually against trying to save whatever life may be on this planet?
Yeah.
Seems like he keeps trying to talk Kirk out of it.
Yeah, sure does.
Which seems a little out of character for Spock.
Yeah. But I think it's to kind of try to reinforce Spock's alienness and Kirk's hero-ness, you know?
I can see that.
It's a weird way of going about it, though, I agree.
Hmm. It was a little off-putting to me. I mean, he gets into the swing a little bit later, but it seems to me like he was being almost unnecessarily combative about, defending, you know, Starfleet's sensor sweeps that they took that he wasn't part of. Because we know that there's been many times, especially in Gold Key, where they'll come across what they had previously considered to be a dead planet or a dead system. And of course, magically, they find life there. So I would think by this time, Spock would be a little more willing to believe that the initial readings were wrong.
Yeah, by this point, I would just expect it.
Page 5. Panel 3, Kirk's theorizing that the people on the planet must be either midgets or angels.
Yeah.
Two completely unrelated things.
Yeah, one of which is like kind of offensive.
Yeah, I'm thinking the conversation on this page is about all of the life. The quote here is, all the life forces emanating from one spot as if the entire population were on the head of a pin. So Kirk, of course, extrapolates from that the people must be either midgets or angels. But angels are non-corporeal, right? I mean,
right.
You could fit an infinite number of angels on the head of a pin, right?
And there's definitely a finite number of midgets you could fit.
Absolutely. But, on the head of a pin? Not even one.
Right. And in fact, like, I feel like if they had just dropped the whole, you know, could be a midget or an angel, and just gone with like, must be like a flock of angels or something, like that would have at least come off better. You know, it would have been him just joking about, you know, angels on the head of a, you know, pin or whatever.
Or they could have gone with something like life forms the like of which we've never seen before.
Yeah, it's life, Jim, but not as we know it.
Maybe they're those little pipe cleaner guys from Cat's Paw. You know, they're small. They're like insect size.
Yeah, they are small.
Yeah, it could fit a few of them on the head of a pin.
But more then,
odds. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, well, you were going right to it. Yeah.
Oh, more odds from Spock.
Yep.
On the next panel here. This time it's 99, well, rounded up to 100. 100 to 1 against them being midgets or angels. Oh boy, Spock is really good at quoting the odds in this one. But Uhura on the away team again, and Nurse Chapel going because, quote, she has proven to be invaluable assistance on past missions, all of which we question her presence on for the most part. There was really only one where she got to use any of her medical skills. I think that was Child's Play.
Yeah,
where she was trying to develop a cure for a that disease that was ravaging the poor children. But the away team choices in Gold Key, I'm going to say, are weirder than the ones in TOS. And
yeah, animated and series. They're always even weird in the TOS. Yeah, it's just another ill-advised away team, right? Like, let's send down the captain, the first officer / science officer, the head nurse, and the chief of communications.
Yeah. No security whatsoever.
Right. Because what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, absolutely. There's nothing. There's only one life form or a couple small ones down there. No big whoop.
Apparently they've never heard of scouting parties.
No, or send down that stinking robot.
Right.
With the view screen. Just put the TV on the bridge, send the robot down, and have him walk around a little bit.
Yeah, apparently they got a room full of them.
Yeah, I guess maybe they forgot that they had them. That's entirely possible. It's a big ship. Anything's possible. Page number 6. I always love to point this kind of stuff out. The away team is wearing backpacks.
Yeah. And then Kirk's is looks like it's falling off.
It does. In the third panel, it definitely looks like it's falling. It looks like the strap broke.
Yeah.
Actually. But yeah, that's something you don't see in TOS. And you see in Gold Key here and there is them carrying bags of some sort. And the funny thing is that if you look at the bottom panel, you can see Spock is clearly wearing the backpack, but he's got the phaser attached to his belt in the way that, or the, attached to his waistline the way that they were in TOS. It's not in a holster.
Right.
It's kind of, you know, whatever, Velcroed to the side. So they got that part right, but they got the backpack part wrong.
But I kind of like the backpack. You know, really? it's something that they I felt like they should have done more of in the series.
They're a little bulky.
Yeah.
But
it makes sense, right? Like, you're an expedition, bring along stuff like, I don't know, water. I mean, I guess you could have them beam it down to you or whatever, but
yeah,
you never know if you're going to get shut off from the ship and stuff like that. So
entirely
possible. I don't know. Yeah. I'm okay with it.
Okay. All right. So panel one on page six, that's supposed to be Scotty, but damn if it doesn't look like McCoy in that red shirt.
Right.
Or right? Isn't that weird?
Yeah. Well, and especially because in panel three, like, that is clearly McCoy.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. That is very clearly McCoy there. Very weird.
Yeah. So I don't know what's going on there. And I also don't know why the transporter is, like, attached to the bridge.
Yeah. That is weird. See, yeah, because in the second panel, I mean, you see Kirk in the transporter on the pad in panel one, and then the next panel directly next to that one, you see him talking to Scotty, who appears to be sitting at his command station on the bridge.
Right.
And then the next panel, the big one, has Sulu operating the transporter, and it's definitely not the transporter console that he's operating. It's some sort of other machinery.
Yeah, some kind of Buck Rogers thing.
Yeah, so we're back to incorrect. Well, the transporter mechanism itself looks correct, or pretty close to it. But everything
like the pad?
Off. Yeah, everything else seems to be a little bit off. Let's see, page 7, panel 2. Strange Soon. Dialogue from Caucasian Uhura. Uhura changes color in this issue. You know, her skin tone changes a couple of times back and forth. But she says here on page 7, panel 2, I feel like we'd been plopped down on a Doomsday Earth movie set. And even stranger than that, Spock answers back, for all intents and purposes, we have, Lieutenant. So that...
Based on what?
based on what? And Spock is well-versed in Doomsday Earth movie sets.
You're right.
I mean, I'm always willing to buy into the fact that Spock has read classic human literature, from the times that we are alive, you know, classic literature that we consider classic literature. He knows, but there comes a time where I can't possibly believe that Spock has enough time in his life up until this point to have read every single book and seen every single movie. Or even read synopses. Like, I don't even think he could have gone to IMDb and just read every entry on every movie in that amount of time. So how does he know so much about the Doomsday Earth movie sets?
Yeah, I mean, T'Pol would at least have an excuse because she watched a lot of old movies as part of movie night. But I don't think Spock has a similar excuse. He seems to just hang out in his quarters, unless he's just like watching Netflix in his quarters all day.
Oh, space flicks.
Yeah, there you go.
The last panel on this page has Kirk getting smacked around by some fronds, some plant fronds, which I thought was kind of weird. they're sprinting through this wooded area and he's just getting beaten up. I wasn't sure if this was like the supposed to mean the plants were attacking him or he was just klutzy and ran into a bunch of trees and fell over or something. But he seems to recover really quickly from that.
Yeah.
Because the next page has him back to normal. But I think page 9 has a pretty cool layout, though, when they reach the temple, you've got this, you got a like one panel in the upper left and one in the lower right, and then a huge area that depicts the temple and the away team discovering it. So that's, that's pretty neat. And there's that eyeball floating in the air.
Yeah, and it's just floating there, which is interesting, right? And it's, I mean, you get the feeling that it's not like kind of an artistic flourish. You get the idea that, oh, no, the triangle eye thing is actually supposed to be there floating above this ziggurat.
Yeah, the only thing that bugs me about it is it's off-center.
Right.
The temple. That triggers my OCD. I think Alberto had to draw that tree branch there. If he omitted the tree branch, he could have put the pyramid eye directly over the center of the temple, and I would have felt a little better about it.
Yeah.
Needs a little photoshopping. I could fix it. But, you know, there's a wooden door on this big stone temple.
Yep.
I was scratching my head a little bit with the big wooden door. I mean, everything else looks so ornate, and they just have this kind of plain wooden door that looks like, you know, you just took a couple planks and nailed them together.
And maybe it's just like the distance, but it seems like there's two rooms up at the top that you could just go into because they don't have doors. So it makes you wonder why they didn't just climb those first before trying to force their way in through the giant metal or giant wooden door.
Yes, exactly. Well, yeah, this is the standard South American looking temple, right? With the steps that lead all the way up to the top.
Yeah.
So it is pyramidal, though. It's got a weird round orb sitting over the main door, which I assume is a sun, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I assume too.
Yeah, and there's these twin, you know, looks like twin rooms at the top, right at the top of each of the staircases that are that flank either side of the wooden door. So all in all, it's a pretty cool temple.
Yeah.
And anything else you want to say about this section before we move on? We're going to be stopped here on page 9, by the way.
Yeah, no, let's get back to the story here.
All right. So getting back to the story, the Enterprise crew enters the temple and finds the old woman who we saw on the cover and the teaser page. She's glowing with energy and introduces herself as Isis, the god of the sun. She tells Kirk that she has summoned them because they wish to see her die. This is a little bit of a foreshadow here. Kirk denies that they want to see her die because I don't think he gets it. He doesn't get what she's alluding to. He asks her where the rest of her people are because they felt that they detected more of a life force than just that of one person. And she tells Kirk that all of the other people on the planet left just moments before the Enterprise landing party arrived. And Kirk asks where they went, and she points at the ground and says that they went from whence they came. So we're not quite sure exactly what she means there. And Kirk orders Nurse Chapel to stay with the old woman while the rest of the landing party goes outside and looks around for the other inhabitants of the planet. So they try to enter the forest that they came through to find the temple, but they're blocked by some large trees. And their phasers, of course, prove to be inoperable. So Kirk has everybody turn around and head back to the temple. And once they get there, they find poor Nurse Chapel unconscious. And Uhura says it looks like sunstroke. Kirk orders Mr. Spock to have the landing party beamed back aboard the ship immediately. Spock tries to contact the Enterprise, but of course, their communications are being interfered with by solar flares. Mm-hmm. So he tells Kirk that they are trapped on the planet. Dun, dun, dun. So we're going to stop here. This is the logical break in the middle of the comic, where we're going to be picking up with the teaser page for, or catch-up page, rather, for part 2. So, rolling back to page 11, panel 4, this is where Isis claims that the Enterprise crew wanted to watch her die. And this, obviously, to me, was a clue as to her actual identity.
Especially, I mean, in the previous panel, or in the previous page, the last panel, she even says, you know, it's the home of the sun god incarnate, right? So that kind of showing her hand there.
Yeah, just a little bit. But I think it was pretty obvious to me that that she was either, you know, connected with the star in some way, their lives were connected, or she was the star or something of that nature, because, you know, obviously the Enterprise had come there to watch the star go Nova and quote unquote die. So therefore, if she was the star, they came to watch her die as well. Why Kirk didn't pick up on that, I don't know. I think he's a little smarter than he's coming off.
A little too clever by half. On page 10, panel 3, there's some really weird poses by Chapel and Uhura. And that same kind of pose you see again, where is it? Page 13 on the last panel. And in fact, it almost looks like the exact same, but it's not. I mean, the lines are a little bit different, but it's like Uhura is in the exact same pose as on page 10. You see that?
That is a very weird pose. It's she's hunched over almost.
Yeah.
The poses of the male characters are a little more natural, but her pose is really, really awkward.
Yeah. And then, oh boy, on the next page, page 14, then we get some really weird ones.
She's shooting from the hip.
Right. It's panel one. Just a weird, weird pose. But then the second to last panel, panel 4, what on earth is Kirk doing?
Yeah, what's up with his hand, too? That looks painful.
Yeah.
Dear God.
It looks inhuman.
It does. His right hand looks almost like an alien hand of some sort. His thumb is bent in a very weird and uncomfortable looking position.
Like a crab hand or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
It is awkward to say the least. And it looks like he's, you know, about to fall backwards. It's just the poses in this one. I don't know what's going on. What's going on, Giolitti?
I have no clue.
I will say though, page 13, panel 1, I really, really liked that panel.
Oh, with the forlorn looking Spock?
Yeah. And the total side view of Kirk.
Yeah, nice hair on Kirk too, by the way.
Yeah. That one was just a really, really nice looking one.
Yeah, it looks like he's been through something. Like he just ran through the woods and got beaten up by some plants.
Right. So, ran into some leaves. I did think it was a bit weird. Did you think it was a bit weird that they just made Nurse Chapel stay behind?
I wasn't sure if it made sense or if it didn't make sense. I mean, I guess they felt they needed somebody to stay there and keep an eye on the old lady.
I would be instituting buddy system in that particular situation, right? Because you don't know who this person is.
Or they could have just beamed down a couple security guys. Just saying. Could have sent up to the ship and said, listen, beam me down two security dudes. They're going to stay here and hang out with ISIS for a while the rest of us go out and poke around looking for people.
Yeah, and even Chapel seems like a little confused by it, like with their ISIS. Yeah.
I do like that panel that you just read from. I love that Nurse Chapel has a pink phaser stuck to her side.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and she's got like just the pose there and everything. Like that's one of those standout art moments in this issue. I thought it looked really good.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I definitely agree there. And I like the kind of tilted head that Isis has in that panel, too.
Yeah.
That kind of confused look, like, oh, all right. You guys are going to go walk around. I told you there's nobody out there, but I don't care.
Yeah. And interestingly, like, there's those, I don't know what you would call them, but she's just sort of radiating lines.
Some kind of energy emanating from her.
Yeah. And that's, in every panel we see her in, she's got that. And I think that's really interesting because they don't quite talk about it, but it's remarkable, you know, as in worthy of remark.
Not sure. Kirk seems very dismissive, despite the amount of evidence in his face
mounting.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the energy ripples coming off of her, the fact that she knew they were there and they'd come into orbit and they were coming down to the planet, that she'd summon them there and all that other stuff.
Yeah. And he seems just generally off his game this issue.
He does. And, you know, even more out of character, at the bottom of page 12, he is imagining an insult.
You're also a warp 4 loony. Oh, I forgot about that.
Warp 4 loony, which I guess is a Trek insult.
Right. In fact, that's what I'm going to be calling anyone that I don't like from now on. They're just a warp 4 loony.
So is it? So I guess the higher the warp factor, the crazier the person is.
Right, right.
So how it works. So if I were to call you a warp 9 loony, that's really bad.
Oh yeah, then I would be like really offended.
You know, and speaking of more out of character, Spock assuming that the people left Isis there as a sacrifice.
Yeah, what? That kind of came out of left field.
Yeah, that's on par with Kirk's midgets and angels comment.
Right. There's nothing to indicate that.
No, not at all. And it's very weird that Spock would go there just based on being asked a question. Kirk asks, what do you make of her, Spock? And he says, perhaps they left her here as a sacrifice. That was his first guess.
Yeah. And then Kirk's like, my sentiments exactly, Spock.
Yeah. Like, what?
Well, what? Yeah. And then on page 14, just more of Kirk being off his game. The plants are attacking them. Their phasers don't work, so he throws his phaser at them?
Yep.
Like, why?
He just threw Federation property away.
Right.
Is that a court-martial offense? I mean, what if that phaser was laying there in the woods and there were people on the planet and they found it?
Yeah,
there you go.
Right.
You just empowered them. You just gave them a weapon that they did not previously have. This is something I found very intriguing about this issue.
What's that?
If you go to page 13 and you look at the last panel that you were talking about before, mm-hmm. It mentions setting the phasers on heat blasts.
Oh, yeah. And we've seen that before.
Yeah, but by a different author.
Yeah.
What are the odds that two different Gold Key authors would use the same phaser setting that was never mentioned in TOS?
Yeah. It is odd.
Yeah, maybe the previous author's work has been read by the current author. I don't know, but
could be.
Seems, and that wasn't that many issues ago. It was only a couple.
Yeah, I wonder what the lead-in time to publication was. Like, which issue would have been out when he was writing this?
Sure, but I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And of course we have the old Trek chestnut. All of the technology doesn't work anymore. Right. The phasers and the communicators, all dead. So once again, we're towing the old TOS line of disabling this superior technology and therefore stranding our people and leaving them helpless in a way.
And then page 14, right, they get back to Nurse Chapel and she's passed out and it looks like sunstroke, which makes me think that, well, wouldn't it have made more sense to leave Spock behind then? You know, Mr. I'm from a desert planet.
Possibly. Yeah.
Because then you wouldn't be having that problem.
Yeah, just nerve pinch Isis and call it a day.
Yeah, right. Yeah, just don't bring her back to the Enterprise.
Yeah, really. Does the nerve pinch work on a god?
Well, find out.
Anything else before we move along?
No, let's get to part two.
All right, so we're starting out part two, and we've got a captain's log here to catch us up on all the stuff in case we came in halfway through the comic. Captain's log supplemental. While the Enterprise orbits helplessly overhead due to interference from the near Nova Sun, we are trapped on a planet marked for doom. Our desperate search for Isis III's mysterious inhabitants has only led us to a strange old woman. But now I have a more immediate concern than saving the lives of the inhabitants, namely saving the lives of the crew and myself.
Yeah, so, I love this panel.
Isn't this amazing? Yeah, this shot of the Enterprise is spectacular.
Really, really is.
So well done. I love the fact that the strong lighting from the sun above is casting these extremely dark shadows.
Yeah.
Bottom sides of the Enterprise. It makes it so much more dramatic.
Absolutely. It's just so well done.
Yeah, the inking on this is really great. So Kirk revives Nurse Chapel, who remembers nothing about what happened, of course. He then confronts Isis, accusing her of being responsible for the loss of communications between them and the ship. Kirk consults with Mr. Spock privately. Mr. Spock suggests that the people of the planet might be in some sort of underground shelter. So he and Kirk set out to explore the temple and find the lost inhabitants of the planet. Nurse Chapel and Uhura are now ordered to stay behind. So the buddy system has been employed here, second time around. To try to get more information out of Isis. So Mr. Spock discovers a hidden passageway. He and Captain Kirk enter it, and a hidden electronic eye activates a trap door below them. So instead of falling, the two of them seem to be floating gently in a kind of an anti-gravity sort of way towards an enormous underground cavern that contains the deserted ruins of a large city. Spock finds some buildings that contain some record tapes, very much like a library, and he activates a playback device, allowing him and Kirk to see images of the planet's past inside their heads telepathically. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that way we can be sure that no gold key issue goes by without a back to the early history of the world.
Yes, absolutely. This is just the gold key staple. So the recording shows that long ago, Isis had come to the lifeless planet that didn't have any sun. She had become a star, supplying the planet with light. And she seeded the planet with her eyes, each of which grew into a living being. These people that grew there worshipped Isis and built a temple for her, and they lived in happiness. Until one day, it came time for Isis to return to the sky, taking her gifts of life and light with her. The people had lived blindly underground and constructed the city as their final resting place. They were not bitter or sad. They knew that one day, Isis herself must pass on as well. So the tape ends, and Spock tells Kirk that the people on the planet have been extinct for 25 million years. That's quite a long time. So we're going to stop here and look at some of the things that happened here. So we talked a little bit about the big splash page on page 15, but one thing we didn't mention is that Scotty appears to be in charge of the Enterprise again. So it's pretty cool that they keep leaving Scotty in charge when Kirk and Spock are both off the ship. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
And page 18, when they fall through this quote-unquote trap door. Yeah, did this look weird to you? Like, the way it's drawn, it doesn't look like a trap. It looks like they just walked through the door and immediately fell. Like, there's no ledge, there's no trap door.
Right, and then panel layout on this one was also weird, right? Because it should have been the small, you know, the panel one, the upper left, would then lead into panel two, which would be the one directly below it, and then the tall one would be panel three. But the way you read it, it's obviously meant to be that tall one where they're falling is panel two.
Correct.
And then the panel below panel one is the third panel. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a weird layout choice. It was a confusing flow for me when I was reading it. Yeah,
definitely for me too. And I was really kind of scratching my head looking at the way that they fell through this quote-unquote trapdoor. And more weird poses too, by the way.
Right.
Panel three and panel four at the bottom.
Especially panel four.
That Spock pose. It looks like he's stretching his back out or something.
Yeah.
Doing some yoga poses.
It is very, very odd. And especially odd for Spock. Like, I can't, you know, the only time I would have ever seen Spock in that kind of pose would have been in, like, Charlie X.
Oh, yeah. It does kind of look like a Charlie X pose. But, hey, you've got another one of those futuristic cities in the background there.
Yeah, gotta love that.
Yeah, Alberto loves drawing those.
Sure does.
So and many of them.
I love that he loves drawing them. Because it's so good. Like, you know, there's obviously some kind of, like, raised, I would say, like a motorway, maybe a walkway. There's rubble all over the place. That sort of familiar Geolity mishmash of architectures. That's just cool looking.
Yeah,
I love it.
Definitely is. And I love that it's radiating with light, even though people have been gone for 25 million years. And
right.
That really makes me question the fact that all their technology still works down there and they were able to play back these tapes.
Yeah.
We need that kind of longevity on our technology here on Earth.
Yeah.
Do you think anything we have right now, if we all went extinct, this stuff would still work in 25 million years? I don't think so.
Yeah.
I highly doubt it. But and amazingly, what kind of technology must the tapes use? If you look at them, they look like reel-to-reel tapes. So if they're actual tapes, like magnetic tapes, there's no way they would last that long.
No, absolutely not.
No, they would have disintegrated by then.
But it's interesting how it projects into their, you know, sort of third eye location, kind of keeping with the triangle eye motif.
Mm-hmm.
Which then on, what is that, page 21, that middle panel, panel 3, mm-hmm. you've got the one alien looking back, and that's where their eye, they're like cyclopses.
Yeah, cyclops, naked cyclops.
Yeah, naked cyclops, and that's the only time that you get a real close-up of these aliens' faces. And my impression of it was that they had an eye there. But then when Isis left, mm-hmm. she took all their eyes with them. Did you get that?
That's kind of what I thought, yeah. Because it looks like they have just like an empty eye cavity.
Right.
Those poor people. I mean, I wonder, did she go and manually remove each one?
Ooh,
by
boy.
Hand? Or does she have some sort of a mass eye removal spell that she can cast and just suck the eyeballs out remotely?
Yeah, I don't know. But then this also, I don't know, this seems more like just a mythical creation story than an actual history that we're witnessing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least with the triangle floating and, sort of shooting down little miniature eyes.
Yeah, it feels almost like Stargate.
Yeah, it's a little weird, but we're kind of led to believe that this is, an actual historical account of some kind.
These alien people that she created, too, they look, the way they're drawn, and you see them standing around the temple worshiping Isis, and you see them kind of lumbering into the city below. They look very primitive to me. They look as if they were drawn to be primitive. I don't know how they could have built all that.
Their super futuristic city that they escaped to.
Yeah, seemed a little odd to me that these one of actually the second one from the left almost looks like it's walking as if it was a primate.
Yeah, like a gorilla.
Yeah. Yeah, very.
I totally got that too.
Hmm.
Yeah, these guys are even more of a mystery now that they've been revealed than they were before we even knew about them.
Hmm. And another big mystery. So has Isis been sitting in that temple for 25 million years?
Yeah, and then only now comes back?
Yeah. That seems kind of lonely.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, anything else you want to say before we get to the wrap-up?
No, I think we got it all.
All right. So picking back up on page 22, on the Enterprise, Mr. Scott has been trying to reach the landing party. And of course, he has not been able to raise them. He's also discovered that the original calculations on the timing of the nova were incorrect, and the star could actually go nova at any time. So he insists that Sulu keeps trying to reach the landing party. Apparently, they can't just beam them back up.
Yeah, man, if only they hadn't sent down their communications officer.
So Spock and Kirk somehow magically find a tunnel that leads them back to the surface of the planet. Uhura and Chapel have been wandering around talking to Isis, and they tell Kirk that Isis is very noble and has a soul. They no longer want to try to convince her to leave the planet and not die as the star goes nova. Kirk accuses Isis of bewitching his crew and tells Spock to use his logic to reason with her. Isis decides to pull Spock closer and set him free. So at that moment, she explodes with tremendous energy, and the landing party is mysteriously transported back to the bridge of the Enterprise. The entire planet that they were on begins to explode. Scotty orders Sulu to take them out at warp 8 immediately, but it's too late. The Enterprise is caught in the explosion and is being jostled all over, just like we saw on the cover of the issue. Only somehow, through this sequence, magically a space pocket saves the ship from utter destruction. So I guess kind of like the eye of a storm or the eye of a hurricane. So the planet is completely destroyed. Kirk asks Spock what happened when Isis touched him. Spock says, "I saw things, inconceivable things. I saw that a star had taken on human form in its final hours so that it could talk to us." So they get into a little bit of a philosophical conversation. Kirk asking, does that mean that stars are actually living beings? And Spock says, from what I glimpsed, Captain, they may be more alive than we are. So that's pretty much where the comic ends. Kind of an abrupt ending. I was a little bit off put by Kirk being so incensed about Isis not wanting to leave the planet and wanting to die there. And then he kind of throws his hands up and says he gives up.
Yeah.
And this is, all right, you deal with her, Spock. That just seemed a little bit strange to me. But then again, Kirk's been kind of off. Maybe he was just having a bad week.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with Kirk in this issue.
Yeah, me neither. But some really interesting close-up shots of Isis starting on page 22. Down at the bottom, and you get a couple there on page 23, that lots of wrinkles.
Oh, yeah.
I wasn't quite sure at the explosion point in this comic that that's what was really going on. I really thought that she was just kind of communicating with Spock to communicate with him, but then I guess she was saving them in some way from the exploding star. But it made it seem like she had the choice when to explode. Right?
Yeah, almost.
Yeah, it wasn't like it was something that was just going to happen. It's almost like as if she, you know, willed it to happen at that particular time.
Yeah, and it does seem kind of malicious on her part.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. She seems to be trying to keep everyone there while she explodes and just destroys everyone, which then makes it weird when she apparently just transports them all back.
Yeah, the maliciousness doesn't really hold up because she actually transports them back to safety. But the whole premise was a little weird to me that, it almost seems like she's mad that they're there to, quote unquote, watch her die. There's a couple of remarks that seem almost pointed and almost angry in a way. But I mean, she had to think that, if she was a star transformed into a human, she had to understand that they didn't realize that, the star was going to be humanoid, that it really was to them just a star, and they were witnessing a, a historic event, the star going over, right? And they had noble intentions of trying to find any living being that might be affected by the exploding star and save them.
Yeah.
So I didn't buy Isis's anger, but maybe she was feeding off of Kirk's apparent anger in this issue.
And then there was page 23. I thought this was really weird. Mr. Spock, see if you can reason with Isis. I give up. I'll try, Captain, but logic rarely works on humans, implying that Isis is human. And then the very next panel, Isis, Spock says, you claimed that your people have left just moments ago. Yet there have been no humans on this world for millions of years. How do you explain that? Well, why humans? Like, who? It's the human problem again on Gold Key.
It is. And not only that, that was Spock's way of convincing her not to die on the planet by quizzing her, putting her on the spot.
Well, how do you explain that?
Very strange. Again, I feel like the whole issue was awkward. It didn't feel like a complete story to me. It felt like it really didn't go anywhere.
Right.
I never felt any of the sense of danger that the cover implied throughout this issue. Now, that's not to say that there isn't a lot of really great artwork. I mean, page 25, that first panel that depicts the thing we saw on the cover with the Enterprise, you know, in the explosion is really great.
Yeah, I do love that one. And you'll note the page right before that, the first panel is also from the cover.
The people falling. That's really great too. And there's a lot of really cool images in here of the, you know, the interior of the ship as it's getting thrown about. I like the final panel on page 24 where they have the them getting thrown around the bridge. Looks really cool.
Yeah.
There's a on page 25, panel 2, there's some smoke there and there's damage. It's the first time we've actually seen
sparks.
Damage inside the ship in a Gold Key comic. So that's cool too. Look of panic on Scotty's face there is great too.
Yeah.
Other than that, the wrap up to this was abrupt.
Yeah, as usual.
I kind of like that they are taking that leap that says that, you know, they're saying stars can take on human form. It almost sounds like a Disney movie or something.
Right.
Some sort of like a fantasy land sort of thing where the star can convert itself into a person and enrich somebody's life or give them some sort of gifts or, you know, turn their day around or whatever you have to, or, you know. But they didn't do a heck of a lot with it. I didn't feel like the story was that compelling. It would have been much more interesting if they'd have done something more with the Isis character.
Just
had her be like an old lady that sits around and you know, doesn't really do much.
I was just going to say, I feel like this issue could have really benefited from a few more pages to just sort of flesh it out.
That and a Kirk romance plot. Like if the star transformed into like a beautiful young lady that Kirk fell in love with only to explode or knew that she was going to die in 48 hours, there you go. There's a Star Trek story for you. That's a TOS in a nutshell.
And just Kirk call it a day.
And the end of it could have been Kirk pining for, you know, the star that got away. I don't know. I think it would have been a great story. Or anybody, any, they could have given the romance to any of the crew members. Give it to Scotty. You know, he's terrible at handling romance in TOS.
Right.
Yeah. But any thoughts on the wrap up of this comic? Are you in a different place than I am with it?
Yeah. The ending really, it just hit you like a brick in terms of pacing. You know, you're kind of going along and like, oh, okay, now there's a struggle. Now they don't want to get free. And then, okay, now they're back on the bridge. The ship's apparently safe.
Yep.
Even though there's some damage. And they're okay. And the comic's over. And it was weird.
It was. Yeah. Very, very weird. The pacing was very weird. I felt like nothing really happened throughout the entire issue up until the very end when Isis blew up. That was pretty much it.
There's a little bit of mystery solving.
Yeah, a little bit. The solution or the resolution to the mystery of the people on the planet wasn't all that satisfying. I don't really feel like it added anything to the story. It didn't change anything. It wasn't like the big reveal, you know, suddenly made them realize, oh my God, she really is a star incarnate. Or, you know, it didn't change the plot of the story or advance it any.
Yeah, I have to agree.
Yeah, so I guess I'm going to have to go non-essential on this one.
Yeah,
nothing.
I have to agree on that as well. I'm non-essential. It's check it out if you just, you know, want to see some cool shots of the Enterprise and the crew. Beyond that, the story you could probably safely avoid.
Yep, I think so. It doesn't bring anything new to the Trek universe, really. It doesn't add any new technology, recurring aliens, anything of that nature. No significant character moments. So. By my own essential rule set, it cannot qualify. So, double non-essential vote from both of us on this issue. And that wraps up issue number 30, Death of a Star of Gold Key Comics. And we'll be back with you on another issue here very, very soon. And in the meantime, if you want to catch up with us, we're on thetricordertransmissions.com, facebook.com/thetricordertransmissions, TTT_pod on Twitter, and you can catch us on any of those places, and we'd love to hear from you. And if you'd be so kind, head on over to iTunes and give us a quick rating. You can feel free to write us a review. We would love that. But if you don't have time and just want to give us a star review, we would love that too. So thanks in advance for helping us out with that.
And thank you.
Yeah, Ian, it was great to talk to you again. Hopefully we'll be together again soon.
Yeah, let's hope. I should be back in Seattle next time we're talking.
Fantastic. Well, have a wonderful trip, and we'll talk to you soon, and we'll see the audience again next week with another episode of the Tricorder Transmissions.
Live long and prosper.
Hi there. Thanks again for listening. If you're cruising the galaxy looking for even more Trek talk, why not visit our good friends Bill and Dan over at TrekGeeks.com? They've got a great podcast that covers a wide range of Star Trek topics, so you're sure to find something you'll love. And if you're in the mood for some awesome tunes, then you really need to head over to 5YearMission.net. The guys are writing a song for every episode of the original series, and each one is absolutely brilliant. So that's TrekGeeks.com and 5YearMission.net. Check them out today.